whistle in, I guess, right? Well, or that was the foxhole.
That was the foxhole one.
This Amateur Radio Roundtable is brought to you in part by ICOM America.
All right. Hello out there, everybody. Welcome. This is Amateur Radio Roundtable. I'm Tom Medlin, W5KUB. We're located near Memphis, Tennessee. And if you're listening out there on WBCQ International Shortwave, we're glad to have you tonight. This is a ham radio show. Learn all about ham radio or amateur radio. And if you do have internet, wherever you are, just go to W5KUB.com and you can join us there. The 40-meter net tonight, oh, man, the band was really, really, really bad tonight. But we had a few contacts or a few people check in. We meet every Tuesday at 5:30 Central Time on 7180, so please join us there. Also, join our Facebook group. We've got a Facebook group. It's just a ham radio group. It's got over 10,500 members in it now, and it's for the show, or it's a ham radio it's a ham radio Facebook group. So we talk about all different things in here, things we're doing on the show, things we're doing outside the show. Post your ham pictures on there, we'll try to have your picture shown on the show one night. We had ham pictures last night, and Katie didn't show up, so I had to do them. Now, I couldn't make up names as well as Katie does. She can make up some doozies. But I did have Glenn there helping me last week. So let's see what's happened since then. You know, our balloon W5KUB21 got in a terrible storm over North Carolina area, and it fought it for about 2 days there, and it finally died on us last week. Mm-hmm. So we've got the next launch ready to go with the SBS-13 balloon, and we're about ready to go. I'm waiting on a voltage regulator. It seems that the strip of regulators that this company sent me were not 4.2 I needed, but when I installed them, they were 1.9, and that's not going to work. So I'm trying to get that resolved right now. So we hope to launch again. We'll talk more about that later tonight. We've got Hamcation with us tonight to talk about upcoming Hamcation in February, and we've got the search. We got the search team from North Carolina that actually went out in the swamp in the jungle to try to locate W5KUB19. They're in here with us tonight. We've got Glenn with us. We got Bill Brown with us. Katie's back with us. Who did I miss? We got Dave with us. We got Dave with us. So let's go around the room real quick and just say hello to everybody. And we'll start with Katie. How you doing, Katie?
Start with me, Tom. Start with me.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. How's it going? It's been really hot here in northeast Wyoming. We had a hellacious windstorm blow through late last week, and I thought for sure we would have lost some antennas. But needless to say, I was really glad when I got up in the morning and looked, and everything is still up on the towers and not laying on the ground. And unfortunately, I discovered when trying to help out a friend with a QSO that one of the coax that leaves the house was a little damaged in our antenna, in our burial project out there. So when Dwayne gets home from working away from home, he's got some work to do out there to get us back.
Well, how do you think it got damaged?
Oh, the front end of the tractor.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah, that pretty much damages anything.
So, wasn't quite sure what it was, but found that. So now I know what that was. But Yeah. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet around here, just doing a lot of household-y type chores, and been playing around with my my FT70 and my Zoom Spot. I managed to kerfuffle something in my settings somewhere, so now it's almost like I'm relearning from scratch how to use it all. And but it's actually been a good exercise, because I know inevitably I'm not the only one who's done this. So once I figure it out, I'll have an answer for people. So when you do mess up your two items, I'll let you know how to fix it.
That's
so
good. And Katie will let you do a show yeah. on digital, because I know nothing about it. You know, I'm old school.
Well, I know enough to screw it up right now.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well.
Anywho, so yeah, I thought I'd come in and hang out with everybody and. I believe John said it wasn't me. Microsoft snuck an update in. No, John, I'd love to blame Microsoft, but it really was me.
Now, Katie, hey, tell us real quick about the fires. Don't you have some fires hitting your way?
We do, yeah. I was telling everybody before the show, there's a wildfire kind of off in Sheridan, which is kind of the north middle part of the state. But, you know, we get the smoke moves quite a bit out here in the Great West. It wasn't anything I really knew about until I moved out here. And you know, we would have smoke out there, and I'm like, oh, it's coming from Montana or Washington State. It's just kind of a different kind of thing. And we're very, very dry out here right now and under what's called a red flag warning. So on Saturday, my mom and I drove over to Gillette and drove past a big black patch next to the interstate. And I saw on Facebook, because I knew that was a new burn spot. And of course, it was unfortunately somebody had thrown a cigarette out the window and sparked up a fire right away. But so the fire and the smells all end up mingling up with the clouds. It gives some really nice looking sunsets and sunrises. However, it really kills the air quality. And usually the first one of the season just gives me a wicked headache. And so I've been feeling the effects of that all day. And finally, a little bit better. I think, you know, it's like once you get past your first one, you get a little bit better. But this time of the year gets a little scary when it's so dry out here.
So when you smell smoke after, do you have to go outside and look around to see what it is? Like maybe it's the house or, you know. I mean.
No, you know, it's funny. You actually don't, because you learn to tell the difference. It's a subtle It's a very subtle smell in the air versus, say, a nearby fire. When we've had some wildfires that have been near, that smell is definitely way different. It's a lot stronger, too. Plus, if it's that close, you see the, you know, like the plume from the smoke. But, yeah, it's not a fun time of the year. And I know I saw some posts from some friends down in Colorado. There's some big fires down there. And they're really feeling the effects of it with the air quality also. And
that's true.
Yeah, yeah, Dave, you would know because you've been out of town, but I don't know if any of those fires have been anywhere out your way. But
yeah, I know the answer to this Wyoming trivia question. What's the city motto? What's the motto for Gillette, Wyoming?
We're the energy capital of the world.
Shaving a haircut.
The sharpest town in the West.
I was going to say, hey, it must have something to do with shaving a haircut, you know.
I haven't talked about limit sign for many years.
Yeah. Gosh.
All right.
Oh, boy. All right.
All right. Everybody remember.
It's time to move on to somebody else.
All right. Everybody remember, you scoot over to your right about 6 inches, and that'll get you. No, it's your left.
I went the wrong way. Other right. Sorry.
Other right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's better. All right. All right. Let's jump out and see what Dave's doing. Dave, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing good. I got back this morning from 2 weeks plus out in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, where it was about 115 every day, very warm. I went out there to pick up an airplane I purchased and to get some training in it. I'm a student pilot. And we flew it back from Phoenix to here. We got as far as Cortez yesterday and then got the rest of the way today. And one of the problems with the fires is that it was so hazy that sometimes it was hard to see the horizon. It was definitely extremely hazy. It's a shame. This fellow that I flew back with, my instructor from down there, had never really been to Colorado, and all he could see was haze. And I knew what we were going by. I knew we were going by some of the most spectacular land in Colorado, but couldn't see any of it. So I'll continue training with him tomorrow In the meantime, my big project that I'm in the middle of is to update all the amateur extra training videos. I have a series of training videos for Tech General and Extra, all of which follow the ARRL book section for section. And so I'm kind of unique. Most of the training that's on the air is kind of independent of the what I consider the standard text for getting your license. And so the extra, they changed a few things around. They went to the new book on July 1st. So I'm about a third of the way through of going through and updating those videos so that they continue to match section for section with the book. I hope to have it done sometime in September, and then we'll be good for 4 years on that one. I did, while I was in Arizona, have my two weekly live streams, one on Thursday evening and one on Saturday at noon Pacific time, and that went really well. And the list of videos that are not license training that I need to do, various antennas and so on, the list is getting long. Taking 2 weeks away from YouTube is like an eternity. There's just so much stacked up to do. I've got one assistant that's leaving me to go to the Boulder area. She's a young college student. And I've got another guy who used to be an assistant coming back to help me for a couple months before he goes in the Air Force. So that helps me get those videos up and ready. Okay. So I got home today, and before we even went home, we went from the airport, dropped by the barbershop and said, make me human again.
Man, you're looking good, dude. I tell you.
Yeah, you're almost looking too good for the rest of us.
Yeah. It's like, how long have you been since you had a trim? Maybe like a year? I mean, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was something like that, you know.
Okay.
I budget for haircuts in the annual column.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I'm glad to know you got an airplane now, because that might come in handy for hamcation.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm going to find a way to do ham radio on that airplane. I don't know how good an HF station I can set up on it, but, you know, maybe a trailing wire or something like that. But I'll certainly take my handheld up.
Yeah. All right. Well, great, man. Sound like you've been having a lot of fun there.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, let's jump over to let's jump over to the dark side. Bill Brown. Are you there, Bill?
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah.
I had trouble getting good lighting. One of my lights went out, and I'm all out of light bulbs on that.
I'm going to have to send you a lamp.
Yeah,
but. But you're okay. We're going to see you okay, man. You know.
I got a little bit of light going on, but not like everybody else.
So what have you been up to?
More of the same, just working at home and working on balloon projects and different things like that.
That's cool.
Programming.
I hear.
I got a new balloon for you.
What kind of balloon?
There you go.
What is that? Oh, yeah. There's a picture. Did you see that on our Facebook group?
Yeah. I got one of these for my birthday.
Did you? In fact, it's the same. I didn't realize it's
same
the very
one.
Same. It's the very same balloon astronaut. You know,
it is. They found it in a lake. One I got for my birthday a couple of days ago. So,
do you think that would hold gas? I mean, as well as some of the other balloons we're using, or
no? Probably it was not big enough.
Not big enough.
It can barely lift its own weight. So.
I'm thinking about launching one of a person, you know, and you can see this person floating through the sky, you know, get like a 6-foot balloon, you know.
Well, one fellow up in Illinois, he flew a tracker on a Darth Vader balloon.
Yeah, that's kind of what I
want
to do.
It looked pretty awesome, but it didn't work very well.
Yeah, that's kind of what I kind of want to do, something in that area there. Okay. Well, let's jump over real quick. Glenn Popiel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How's it going?
Pretty good. Man, you got good lighting tonight, man. You got my Bazinga shirt on. I need to go get my...
Yes, sir.
and it fits you.
It fits me after I lost 70 pounds.
Yeah. You know, hey, we go back a long ways. I had a couple Bazinga shirts, and we did a show one night, and Glenn was over here, and we had built a virtual presence device where we had this robot, and the head was a monitor. We brought in John Amadeo, the producer of Last Man Standing, and he was on our virtual presence device, and on our virtual presence device, we had a Bazinga shirt on it, and I think Glenn fell in love with the shirt, so I lost my shirt.
Yeah.
But I've got another one.
That tends to happen when you're around me.
Yeah. But anyway, hey, that's cool. It looks like it fits you good, too, man. Hey, that heart condition you had must be doing you good.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing real good now. I mean, overall, between that and everything else, I think I've lost, I think it's right at 80-something pounds total over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, well, Glenn, scoot over to your right about 6 inches.
What are we going to do here?
Well, I just wanted you to get a little bit over there. And you know, here we are talking about people's health and stuff. Hey, that reminds me real quick. There's a new contest on 75 meters. It's called 75 meter bingo.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people play this now. We got to figure out, you know, if we can do some type of award for it. But, for instance, you know, if you hear somebody talking about gallbladder surgery or, you know, having chemo or, you know, a hip replacement, you could get a bingo here. You could get a bingo and we could win something. So we might try to implement that here soon.
Yeah. Can now, you look up at this picture and see over my right shoulder?
Yeah, I see it. Let me get it back on here. Oh, wrong camera.
Now cameraman, we can see behind cameraman. The scenes.
Oh, wrong camera. Cameraman, get with it, cameraman. Get with it.
Come on, wrong person. You'll get it.
Come on, cameraman. Let's go back to the – there we go. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, are you not afraid that thing might jump down on you?
It's a constant thing. That's Rodan. Yeah. If you remember your Japanese monster, Godzilla's the ground-pounding monster. Rodan flies. And
yeah.
That's the flying one. And, oh, wow. I am on her table. She will jump down from there onto the table. So, yes, it's only a matter of time. And that's the one that has the 5-foot, 9-inch vertical leap. But anyway,
I can't
wanted to,
jump,
to do this real quick before we get started. Got this
what
not too
it?
Long ago.
What is, to, hold it to turn, your right. There you go.
As it turns out, that monster there achieved the highest title you can in the CAT organization of Supreme Grand Champion.
Wow.
And we believe that she is the first female of her color, which is a brown tick tabby, to ever achieve that title.
Wow. Congratulations.
In the history of the association.
So and, what are you doing on?
You live with somebody famous.
So what are you doing on here, Glenn? Glenn, what are you doing on here? Why aren't you over on some CAT video somewhere?
Oh, I do that too.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Oh, gosh. I was on TV back in Birmingham years ago with the cats a couple times, yeah. But anyway, had
all right.
to do that. But, you know, because she's bound, she photobombed us once, and I'm sure they will again too. But I wanted to show this off. Doesn't do a whole lot right now because it's not hooked to anything, because the rest of it's back in the lab.
What's it do?
And this is a LED ring. It's got 32 addressable LEDs
yeah.
in a circle. Now, are you – oh, that's perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now, are you familiar with the Yaesu rotor controllers?
Yeah, yeah.
That have that nice round dial?
Right.
You can put this on the outside edge, and it fits right on that outside ring. And as you push the buttons, you can have – the LEDs rotate along with the dial.
Well, that's cool.
And that's actually going to be one of the projects in the next Arduino book.
All right.
And
it'd be good direction finding the ring, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You could do it that way, too.
Do you supply the Yaesu to go with it?
No, you're going to have to buy that yourself. It's in the
that kind of takes it from a $5 project to an $800 project.
What I do is, you know, the later model rotor controllers are all computer controlled and everything, but if you've got one of the older Yaesu, like the G450, the G800, before they added in the electronics to control stuff, it would be real easy to add this into it. And you can even add the control features as well. That was in my first book.
You can just add it to the parts list, one Yaesu.
Yeah, one Yaesu. And believe it or not, if you hunt at Hamfests, assuming we'll ever have Hamfests again, you can find controllers without a rotor or whatever, and you can get those reasonably cheap these days, particularly the older ones, because everybody wants a computer-controlled one. And
all right.
$20, I can take a Ham M, Ham 2, Ham 3, Ham 4, and give it computer control.
All right, guys, let's move on. We got a lot to do tonight. Yeah. Now we've gone around the room here with our regulars. Now let's jump into our segments. We've got a segment here tonight with Hamcation and also the search team. So we'll get to you guys in just a minute. Let's pick up the Hamcation guys and let's pick up Michael and Mike, and we're going to talk Hamcation. And tell us, man, is it going to happen?
It is. Hamcation is scheduled to happen on February. Actually, this year is a little different. It's going to be 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th. The 11th is actually the ARL training tracks, which will be held by ARL. It is the ARL National Convention this year, so they're actually coming in a day early to do some training tracks like they did several years ago up when they had the convention in Connecticut. And then the actual Hamcation starts on the 12th through the 14th at the Central Florida Fairgrounds, and we're in full swing to have it.
Well, the 12th is a good day. That's my birthday.
That's good. The website is open now. Everything's live on it. You can buy your tickets. You can buy your swap tables, commercial spaces.
So I've got the website up there for everybody. So, anything particular you want to show them here? You can do it all right here. Is that correct?
Yeah, everything is on the website.
Tickets? Yeah, there's tickets.
Tickets are at the top. If you go under event info, we've added a whole bunch of hotels for this year for the national convention. We actually have 10 of them listed on the website this year. So pretty much from cheaper ones to more expensive ones, depending on what your taste is and what you like to do on it.
You got a lot of vendors coming back. A lot of these, most of these are recognized.
We do. That's not all of them yet. We update them as they send in their information. So that's everybody that's already registered for next year already.
And Michael, you want to add in too that we've got RVs is open, reservations for RVs are open, tickets.
Oh, yeah.
RVs are open also. The tickets are open. Swaps, tailgate, commercial, everything's open. We've been getting reservations already for everything.
See, Michael, how about the theme for Hamcation?
The theme this year is Rediscover Radio. It's a joint theme with us and ARL this year. What it would mean is if you're new to amateur radio, you're discovering it for the first time. If you're been around in amateur radio for a while, you're actually rediscovering amateur radio if you're not active. So that's our theme this year for Hamcation. And it is also our 75th anniversary for Hamcation. So we've been doing this for 75 years.
Oh, wow. And you always have pretty good weather. Now, last year it was a little warm out there, I think.
For people that's not around here, it seemed warm. For us, it's cooler. I mean, right now we're high 90s with a heat index. Usually been 105 lately. So in February, 85 to 90 is a cold front for us, so it feels good.
Some of us really love going to Florida in February for hamcation.
Yeah. Well, sometimes a little heat's better than 30 below zero, you know.
Yeah, you can say that again.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had a good time there last year. It was great. How's your attendance been doing each year? Have you been growing?
We have been growing. Last year, we grew by around 500 people last year due to the rain that was on supposed to happen on Friday, Saturday. It kind of hurt our attendance a little bit.
Uh-huh.
We did get up to 24,000. I think it was 24,200 for last year.
That's some good numbers, 24,000, yeah. So, hey, Mike, you're the awards guy. Have you? What kind of awards are we talking about this year?
This year will be the third year for us to turn around and present the Carol Perry Educator of the Year Award. So Carol was the recipient 2 years ago for that. It was our inaugural year for the Carol Perry Educator of the Year Award. The award is intended to be bestowed on an individual that has made an outstanding contribution in educating and advancing youth in amateur radio. Now, Carol was a teacher, and I shouldn't say was, she still is. She's continuing to work with youth. She was on the virtual expo a couple weekends ago, and she had four youth that she was helping along there. Last year, we had another educator that won the award, Melissa Poor. She is currently a high school teacher, a real neat individual. She's not only is teaching youth, she's helping her colleagues out on ways to turn around and teach. I spoke to her, we traded some emails recently, and she was turning around and do a virtual space camp. So, and doing some Morse code through a virtual space camp, and coming up with an antenna for to work with the kids too. So that's kind of neat. So we're, the award's intended to go to anyone that is promoting education, advancing the youth in amateur radio. So it's not limited to a teacher. So if you know somebody that you know is involved in a youth program, scouts, or some other program that's promoting radio, they are excellent candidates for the award. So we accept nominations online hamcation.com/awards. The submittals can be done through that, or there is also a form that can be downloaded, and then it can be emailed to awards@hamcation.com. The awards will. We are accepting awards until November 1st, and at that time we'll collect the awards together, get our committee to turn around and evaluate them, and the goal is to turn around and identify the award winner probably in the early December timeframe so we can see about getting them lined up to be sure they're at Hamcation next year. So, looking forward to it, and I know we've got one nomination in there so far, and like to start seeing some more come in, but the last year it was a bit of a challenge. The selection of the award winner was not easy. We had some excellent candidates, and the committee went around several times before we settled on Melissa. So, like to see some other folks. I know there's a lot of folks out there working with youth, and this is a great way to recognize their contribution to amateur radio and to youth. So.
Well, I talked with Melissa last year. She is just a outstanding person involved in all aspects. I mean, I think her school, her kids actually built a satellite. I'm not sure who they got to had to launch it, but she's also into ballooning too. So that's pretty cool.
She's in ballooning. She's very heavily involved with ARACE. She is actually the liaison into the, let's see, the Amateur Radio of International Space Station program. So she's she loves the space program. She's all about that and promoting it. And amateur radio is just one of the tools that she's using to help educate children and get them involved in the STEM education path.
Well, you know, last year you guys gave away, Michael, some prize tickets on our show here, a couple different shows, and we actually had winners in those people that actually won prizes there. So I don't know if you're going to do it again this year, but we're going to have you back on the show again here probably a couple times between now and then, and we're going to talk this thing up because it's one of the best ham fests around. So, Michael, how do you guys work your prizes? If like the hourly prizes, do you if they're not claimed, do you give them away at the end of the ham fest?
What we actually do at 1 o'clock on Sunday, if they are not claimed, we re-raffle them one time. If it's anything that's donated, we re-raffle it until it's gone. If it's anything that the club buys, then we just re-raffle it one time. Most of the time it was claimed. Last year, actually, everything was claimed, but I think one radio. So that's what we do on Sunday.
Okay. Well, hey, everybody, you can go to hamcation.com and find anything and everything you need there. To order tickets or look at schedules or forums or whatever, it's all there.
Yeah, and one last thing, if everybody goes to the main page of hamcation.com, if you scroll down to the bottom, there are several ways you can actually get information about Hamcation. One of them, if you put your email address in at the bottom and subscribe, you will subscribe to the Hamcation
Is it newsletter. On any page?
It's actually on the main page.
Okay, the
homepage.
Is that the, well,
yeah, just
I wonder if about
click the logo at the top.
Logo, okay, that'll get us there. Yeah. There we go.
And if you scroll all the way down to the bottom, there's this little thing to subscribe.
Yeah, there it is, right there.
There you go. If you subscribe to this, we'll send out emails, updates with Hamcation, anything that's going on, any changes, when stuff happens. Also, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Our handle on all of them is Hamcation, and we put out our social media committee puts out stuff on them regularly also.
Yeah. Now, don't you guys also have an app? Is it the ARRL app that tells you if you win a prize or something?
Correct. We teamed with ARL and actually Hamvention for the ARL events app. We will have it again this year. You can download it. I don't think it's actually... You can download it now just by searching for ARL Events app, either in iOS or Android. There's nothing in it yet. We haven't populated it. Closer to the show, usually December timeframe, we start populating it with stuff. But you can follow everything on there. You can check out what forums we have, the times. You can set reminders in there to remind you of forums. Every hour, all the winners are listed in there. For prizes, you can connect with other people, you can connect with vendors on it. There's a whole bunch of stuff you can actually do with the app.
Well, all right. Well, look, looking forward to it. It's always a great ham fest, and we want to have you guys back on again as much as you want to. You just contact me when you guys want to get back on.
Sounds good. Thank
well,
you
let's
for
do it again, man. Hey, thanks for
Thank you very much, Tom, for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for sharing all that with us. And, hey, as we get closer, it's going to get more exciting, I know.
I have a question for Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Where do I find the link to recommend somebody for the Educator of the Year?
Okay, so if you start at our Hamcation main page, there's an event info. Click on that, and then down at the bottom of the list of that is awards. And then scroll down on the awards page, and you'll see the nomination form there. So,
great. Okay.
And, Also, just above that nomination form, there's a link if you'd prefer to download a PDF and submit it that way. But either way will work. So you can submit it online or take the PDF and then submit it to email it to awards@hamcation.com.
Great. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
And what were the dates again for the Hamcation?
It's the actually date? February 12th, 13th, and 14th.
12th, 13th, and 14th. Thank you.
You better file a flight plan, Dave.
We do have a executive airport, a smaller airport here you can actually fly into.
Yeah, but wait. I don't think Dave's an executive. He probably can't use that.
The airport or the airplane that I got, I'd have to start flying now to get there by then.
Oh, man. All right. Well, hey, thanks, Mike and Michael. Thanks, man. We'll see that. Hey, feel free to stick around on the show if you want to tonight or leave, whatever you want to do, man. It's all up to you.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks. All right. We'll be back in just a minute, guys. Let's see. I need to do this right now. Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705 and its optional multifunction backpack. The IC705 is your perfect QRP rig as you have base station features at the tip of your fingers in a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at just over 2 pounds with RF direct sampling for most of the HF bands and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. And it has a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen with a live band scope and waterfall. Additional features include 5 watts with the BP272, 10 watts with 13.8 volts, SSB, CW, AM, FM, as well as D-Star. It has a micro USB connector and Bluetooth. Integrated GPS with antenna and GPS logger. It has a micro SD card slot. The HM243 speaker mic comes standard, and it supports QRP operations. The perfect accessory is the optional backpack. It's the LC192. It has a special compartment for your IC705. Visit www.icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios. And don't forget, you should register for QSO Today's groundbreaking Virtual Ham Expo. This expo will be filled with virtual exhibits and great speakers, all from the convenience of your computer, tablet, or smartphone. Visit QSO Today, hamexpo.com to register.
LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art antenna tuners for every amateur need, from QRP to QRO, fixed stations, portable and remote. An LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using our lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. LDG is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. All LDG products carry a full 2-year warranty that is fully transferable. Support is only a phone call or email away. We're always here to help you. Visit us on the web at LDGElectronics.com.
All right, we are back. What was that, Katie? Is that one of those little...
I was like, cut.
Well, yeah. We need, hey,
that was for all the chit-chat behind the scenes.
Yeah,
not for you guys.
We need to get one of those boards right there. Yeah.
All right, up here when we do that, that's a mosquito.
Yeah, really.
We need to make a blooper reel of all the stuff that has gone on behind the scenes.
I know.
Blooper? Well, there's been a lot of bloopers here. Like right now, the phone lines are not open. The phone lines are not open. I just did that for...
ignore that.
Yeah, ignore that. Yeah. Ignore that. Okay. So, okay.
Good.
So
put that in the blooper reel.
So let's okay. Hey, let's talk about...
We got him. He's off now.
Let's talk about W5KB21.
Yes.
It died. Man. It didn't last very long. It lasted about 5 days. We launched, I think, on Monday, and by Friday morning, it had died. It was kind of doomed to die anyway. We made some accidents as we were launching it. I don't know how it played into the deal, but we miscalculated the weight by quite a bit when we put the hydrogen in. We forgot to subtract a number that was really important to get the weight right. So we messed that up. We put way too much lift in it, and but it took off and it flew. And we thought it wasn't going to last one night, but it went through the storm. And in fact, it hit some pretty good storms. Here's a couple pictures of what the area looked like that day or two that we were flying around down there in a circle. And there's one position there. The clouds were at 46,800 feet, and we were flying pretty heavy with this one with the battery. So our maximum altitude was about 40,000. So we were in some clouds for sure. The neat thing about it was at certain times our battery, as we got into a cloud, of course, normally you wouldn't get any sun, but our batteries kicked in and helped us out right there. So we kind of enjoyed having a battery there on at this time. They don't work very well at 40,000 feet. They work almost not at all. But as we watched it coming down, the battery warmed up and it started working. And I was watching the altitude, and every 10 minutes we could see how many feet it was losing every 10 minutes. And so we knew it was coming down. And at one point, I calculated the number of feet it came down, and we got down to 38 feet, I think, in 10 minutes. And I thought, oh, it's starting to recover, and it's going to go back up. And Bill can explain that in a little while. I think it was probably caused by icing. And the icing got on a balloon. It came down. It de-iced a little bit and went back up. But it did that a couple times over the next 24 hours, and it finally came down. So the ants, you know, we did recover the ants. We knew right about where they were. We sent the helicopter out there. We picked the ants up. Not hurt again. You know, last time they had to get in the life raft, but this time a good pickup on them. They were a little worried when they first were going to hit the ground because they noticed that there was a bunch of ant eaters on the ground in the area. So they actually were, you know, it was pretty frightful there for a few minutes. But Huey and Dewey were up there this time alone. Let's see, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Louie was back at Mission Control, so this was a two-man flight this time. Let's see. We ended up crashing in a swamp in a pig farm. And that's where we're going to bring in. We got the rescue team with us here tonight. Hey, rescue team, why don't you guys come on in here and talk to us? I don't know which one of you want to jump in first, but come on in, rescue team.
Bob, you go ahead and go first.
Okay, fantastic. This is Bob Williams, K4BWM. And we're here in Jacksonville, North Carolina. It's about 50 miles from where the vehicle impacted. And it went in right at the middle of a swamp. There's about a 2x4 or a 3x4 area that we had coming in. Thursday night, I was up till about 1:30 in the morning watching this thing go up and come down, go up and come down. About 1:30, I said, well, I'm going to bed. And I got up about 7:30 in the morning, somewhere around there, and saw that Dale had logged the last one. Last log he got, I think, was about 7:12. And we noticed that this thing was about 50 miles from us. Well, it was way down about 90 to 100 miles away from us Thursday evening. Friday morning, of course, it had traveled back up. The prevailing currents were bringing it up into this area. And we had hoped that, you know, it'd be up here during daytime and we could get some good tracks on it. But unfortunately, Mother Nature had something else to say for us, and we did go out Friday morning. Actually, it was Friday afternoon by the time we got our team together and went out. Dale and I jumped in the Suburban, and we grabbed some gear to go out there and had GPS coordinates of approximately where it went in. I had already done some pre-research to find out who the farmer was that owned the land, so when we went up there, we'd have a name and a contact that we could reference. So we got up there, met his wife at the house. She pointed him out down at the hog farm, and we rode on down there and met with him. And he was he's prior military, and both Dale and I are retired Air Force. hence the aircraft behind me. And we chatted with him a little bit. He was interested in what we were doing. We explained to him what the balloon was up there for and what the purpose of it was and what we wanted to do. So we grabbed the camera and we grabbed a couple of HTs and started out into that swamp area. And let me tell you.
I got some pictures here of you guys right here. And, your Air Force hat, it made me have to post a picture of mine. See, I've ran into two of my Air Force buddies now on this search mission here. Hey, cool. And you guys went out there and put your jungle training, I guess, in action there. If you look at the growth behind here, I got a few pictures here just to kind of explain what we're looking at here.
Well, the one you have up on the screen right now is a picture of myself out there that Dale took of me. That's what it looks to egress into the area. That's what the undergrowth was that we had to go through to get into the tree line. Right in front of me there, you'll see a cornfield. And as you go through some of the photographs here, you'll see some additional ones there. That's Dale and the corn. That corn's about 7-8 foot tall. We did not bring a ladder. There was no way that we could see over the tops of those corns, and we weren't going to go out there and tramp all that farmer's field down.
Yeah, but was he pretty receptive to let you guys go out and look around?
It was not his field. It was a field that was owned by the neighbor there, but we asked him if there would be any problem. He said no. Everybody was pretty friendly out there, and we stayed on the edges of the field, so
yeah.
We didn't really get into the field, and we weren't. I grew up in cornfields up in Michigan, so. I was familiar with them, so we knew what to do.
Well, now, I don't know what that is. Someplace, is that like kudzu or something? I mean.
It's kind of like that.
It's like a vine, man. I don't even know how you'd walk through there.
Well, you find, fortunately for us, the farmer's son and son-in-law had cut some trails through there for deer hunting out there in that woods. And that's how we initially got into the area. Mm. But once you got into the woods, this vines and all were all inside there. So we could not have gotten through that part right there probably without severely damaging the skin cells of our body.
Yeah, I would imagine so. A lot of trees, too. A lot of forest there.
A lot of forest in there. In fact, it's right on the edge of the swamp. The farmer's land was centered right there in the directory, and about two-thirds of the area that we wanted to search is all swamp land that's covered nothing but trees just like that. So even if we had found or able to triangulate where that balloon is at, trying to get into it to pick it up would have been a real challenge.
Yeah, and especially if you'd been up in the top of one of those trees somewhere, probably you would have never got it down. But, you know, the battery, that thing transmitted probably 10, 12 hours, I think, that next day. But then it shut down. I think the next day after that, it came on for one transmission. So we don't have any more transmissions. The solar panel probably turned upside down or it's fallen in the shade.
Yeah, we got two transmissions out of there at 1912, I think, and 1922 hours on that. But they were only, 10 minutes apart. You know, it takes us an hour to get up there. So
yeah.
There was no way we could have even responded to that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, being Air Force, you probably had some connections there to get some help for searches. You needed to really search from the air.
You know, Dale said we need a drone, and I talked with him a little bit, and he says, well, I know somebody. So there we are.
All right. Well, that's probably the biggest search we've ever had for our balloon right there.
I actually had some people contact me and ask me, did you guys really have a B-25 come out there?
Yeah, really? Yeah,
I'm a photographer, and I photoshopped that in there
from
an air show that I'd taken back in 2012. We're right outside it is the largest Marine Corps station or base here on the East Coast. Jacksonville is the home of Camp Lejeune, the Marine Corps' largest facility over here on the East Coast. So up around Cherry Point, they have an air show every year or two.
You know, I thought a lot about this. Our friend Doug Wheelock, astronaut Doug Wheelock, he just a couple years ago retired from the Army, colonel, and in the Army he flew Apache helicopters. And I was thinking maybe contact Doug, and with a military base close by, he might could go check one out for an hour or so, you know?
He might be able to.
Yeah.
My prior office, though, probably would have gone out there and did a little investigation on that.
Yeah, might have. Yeah. So it looks impossible just to move around in, and we'll probably never find it, but it's not a lot lost, but it could turn into a neat little fox hunt, you know.
Well, Dave's got a new plane.
Pardon?
Yeah, Dave's got a new plane.
Yeah, they can take his plane
down here.
I'll
tell you what, I'll look for it out here because the flying's better.
Yeah,
all right,
there you go.
All right. Well, your Photoshop picture looked really good. I almost couldn't tell it was Photoshop. Now, this is the actual picture here. This is not Photoshopped right here. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, again, you can see the forest. Right there in that forest is a swamp.
That's pretty much the area that we'd have to look at. And the little balloon arrow up there at the top is actually where the center of that search area is at.
Yeah.
That's where we went through the woods out there, and we didn't even break the skin on the amount of search that we'd have to have done in that forest.
It would need to be done. My thoughts are it's laying in the top of those trees out there somewhere. That's just what I'm thinking.
And Tom, I would agree with that just from the incredible signal strength you were getting the day after it the day it landed. It indicated to me that the balloon was still inflated and the antenna was above the treetops, but the bottom part was trapped in the tree limbs, and it was probably in a tree because it got pretty good sunlight during the day, and then that storm went through, and then it still had some life to it. But the next day, I think the storm probably popped the balloon or got tangled up, and so you only got daylight to make it operate for two transmissions, and we haven't heard it since. So,
and you know,
it may come back, but
I was going to say, winter's coming on. Won't the trees lose some leaves and
they will.
On the ground?
It's a very, very large, a very small needle and a very large haystack because it's about a 3 by 5 mile search area. We successfully found one by driving around our search area in that 6-digit grid square, and we just went until we got a really strong signal on 20 meters during the transmissions, and we were fortunate that it was transmitting throughout the day. And then if you tune to the ninth harmonic on like 126.87, I think it is, if you get within maybe a tenth of a mile or so of it, or maybe 1,000 feet, you can start picking it up that way and really DF on it. But ours was hanging from a fence post 1 foot off the ground, and we had a great find. It was right behind a barn, and the antenna was only 3 feet off the ground. But that's a tough area there.
Well, you know, when I test it, I hang a tracker here about 30 feet in the air and let vertical dipoles almost touching the ground, and it goes up 34 feet. I don't get but maybe one or two people pick it up at that. But, man, when we were in those trees there, people in Utah were picking it up. The Northeast was picking it up. Everybody was. So it was putting out a pretty good signal there.
I want to talk a little bit about the signal that you've got some equipment, Dale, that we can use if we can ever acquire a signal again.
Yeah. We'd
been able to get back out there and look for it again if we ever did hear another signal. That day, unfortunately, we got out there and we dialed in the frequency, and I don't think that we ever actually heard anything, which gave me the idea that, you know, we probably weren't as close to it as we had hoped we could be. And we decided to go ahead and give it a shot anyway and go out into that jungle and see if we could spot something, and unfortunately we didn't, we weren't able to. But I have to say Bob's the instigator on this. He got me interested in tracking this about last Thursday, mm-hmm. and I couldn't take my eyes off of it after that. And we, like you said, we watched it descend and lose altitude. And I thought on Thursday that we lost it all together. And got up Friday morning, and Bob said it was beaconing again. So I thought, well, if it's doing that, maybe we have a chance of finding it. And when it finally went down in our area, we went ahead and threw some stuff in the back of the Suburban and took off after it.
Well, at one point, it was raining and dark there when you guys were looking for it, and I think the sun came out for a while.
It was. We left in the rain, and we returned home in the rain.
Yeah.
And, or fortunately for us, it wasn't raining when we got up there, but the humidity was horrible. It was, somebody compared it to the jungles of Vietnam, and I think it probably was.
It probably was, yeah. Yeah.
Along that line.
It looked like it... So, hey, Bill, this is a pretty good distance here. Look at this. That little 10-milliwatt transmitter did pretty good. There's a reception. This is long as I've ever seen. You know, when I saw a 9,000 kilometer on the last flight, but on this one, 16,000 kilometers, almost 10,000 miles.
Australia and yeah. Europe. And that was after it hit the ground. I have a chart showing the last day's altitude curve if you want to take a look at that.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot we can get that chart there. You want to – do you have it?
I can share it if you
– Yeah, go ahead. I don't have it here. You know what? I can pull it up on APRS, right?
Well, no, it'd have to be on HabHub here. You have to.
Well, can you bring it up if you've got it handy? Just go ahead and bring it up, because
I'll bring it up, but you have to make me shareable.
Oh yeah. All right. Let me see if I can remember how to do this again. Let's see.
Yeah. While he's doing that, I know you get the grid square, and that's kind of a large area. But don't you get the exact GPS latitude and longitude coordinates as well?
Nope.
It only goes to six digits, and those six digits takes you to about a 2x4 mile area.
So
you've got to go to a 10-digit in order to get down close enough to get to 35 feet or so.
So, hey, Bill, how about let's see. So, Bill, it also transmit on JT9. So how about writing the software where when we're below 1,000 feet, it transmits the coordinates on JT9?
I'll do that for the next flight.
It would have to be transmitting in a tree for you to find it, though, you know.
So it actually was strong enough that we probably could have picked it up on JT9.
Yeah.
I was picking it directly at my house in Huntsville while it was in the trees.
Oh, wow.
So it was bobbing along just beautifully. Then it hit a line of terrible storms, picked up a lot of ice, and down she came. And then when it hit down below the freezing level, which that day was about 14,500 feet, the ice started to melt off, and it recovered at about 8,000 feet and started back up again. Then it went about to 20,000 feet. That's that first peak after the dip. Picked up more ice because it was still cloudy and still storms in the area, and down she came again. And it did this for hours, and finally it came down. You can see where it finally dips off there to the right and comes on in the morning, but that's all night long on batteries.
Mm-hmm.
Battery worked great when you were down around the freezing level.
Yeah, and and I don't know how much sun we had the day it rained and it was in the trees, but we were almost all day, too.
Almost all day, but it worked all night long on that battery after sunset. So.
Yeah.
I think it was running about 3.5, 3.4 for all that day.
Right.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
It was getting some sunlight the first day. The second day, the battery voltage was pretty low, and we only got those two transmissions. So it's probably slipped down in the tree and getting some foliage coverage on the solar panels. So I just wanted to show you the very unique altitude curve that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise if you hadn't flown a battery on this.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think is a benefit for this is that you can kind of see what's happening. We would have never known this happened if we had not had that battery on there. So that was kind of neat, you know. So I'm putting the next one together. We're gonna the last one was heavy, very heavy, and we messed it up. But we're gonna try to be more careful on this next one. Hopefully, we can launch in about another 10 days. Bill, you're gonna have to pick us a good day to launch. I don't want to go in any more of these circles out there. I want it just straight all the way around, man.
You were pushing the envelope, so to speak, on this particular flight.
We were?
The maximum free lift that you could possibly get away with and the heaviest payload.
That's right. Well, like you said, I mean, hey, the maximum free lift for this balloon is, I think, 12 grams. And we had 12 or 12 and a half grams in it. So we were pushing the limits on it for sure.
What was the weight of everything, 34 grams?
It was 34. Wow. And that's where we made a mistake when we filled it in the shop. When we weighed the entire system, we forgot to subtract the little cardboard pieces that the antenna was wrapped around, and that was 6 grams. So we thought the payload was 40 grams when it was really 34, and that caused us to put double the lift in. So our bad. We're going to not do that this time.
So Dale and Bob, do you have an HF mobile with a laptop that you can go out in the field and maybe pick up some digital modes directly? So if we put JT9 on it, for example, it would actually send a finer position report.
Yes, we do have that capability.
We do have that, yes.
So we'll try and add that for your next flight, Tom.
Well, you know, that would be nice, but the thing is, it's going to have to be working. It's going to have to be laying in the sun when it comes down. And, well, I don't know. I guess if it transmits, you know, just at 1,000 feet, that would pinpoint it pretty close, maybe.
And you're going to have to contract Dave to fly us around there to wherever it goes down next time.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Just give me about a week and a half to get out there.
Well, and you know what, Bill, it isn't going to crash next to Dale and Bob next time. It's going to crash in the Sahara Desert or you know, somewhere, you know, out in the desert of China. So JT-65 may not help, but
well,
there's a slight chance it could.
Tell you where it is. In case you can find somebody out there to go out after it. Bob and Dale, you may not have heard this story, but we had one land in the Mojave Desert, and my friend went out in a Jeep running around the sand dunes and the small mesquite bushes, and he was just driving around listening for the strongest signal he could get on 20-meter whisper, and all of a sudden it was pegging his S-meter, and he stopped the Jeep, and there was the balloon right in front of him, and he walked out to the balloon. It was laying flat on the desert sand, and the antenna was flat in the sand, but it still could be heard 1,000 miles in all directions. And he traced the antenna back, and he found the payload underneath his tire.
I'm very familiar with the Mojave Desert. I was stationed at Edwards Air Force Base for 3.5 years out there.
This is near 29 Palms where it came down.
Okay.
Yeah. Not terribly far away.
All right. So, hey, Bill, here's kind of where we're going with this thing. Let's see. I'm going to show you a couple pictures. Let's see what this is. So we're going to try to go. This time, and I hate them. I really hate them. I hate them. But we're going to go with them. The little glass, solar cells. I like the little flexible square ones, but these put out so much more current, and especially if we're going to run a battery, I need more current. These 10 cells here in series will give me 5 volts at 240 milliamps. And, you know, these are the first ones I built where I didn't break one. And I want to tell you something, guys, if anybody out there is wanting to do these, I would solder a wire. You got to solder a wire on the top, and then you got to solder it on the bottom of the next one, and top to bottom, top to bottom. And I would, after I'd solder that wire on, I'd try to bend that wire a little bit so I could put it under the other one. And every time I'd bend that wire, I would snap the panel in half. That's how fragile they are. And even if I use flexible wire, when you heat it up and put solder on it, it kind of sucks it in like a wick, you know, and it becomes a solid wire again. And I couldn't get four panels together without breaking two. But this time I used some very small wire, you know, maybe 34 or something like that. And it's easy to bend them. You know, you're not breaking a panel. So those would be glued on top of the styrofoam like that. There will be our battery. There's our tracker up there. We've got a little hole cut. Let's see. I cut a little hole in the styrofoam right there, so we're going to set those down in it, and like that. And then the panels will go. The solar cells will go on top of it like that, and trying to hold weight down. I think this entire one, Bill, with the antenna and everything, I think I can come in about 15 grams with it. So that's about normal for what we normally fly. So, and what we're going to do instead of gluing, I found that if I use adhesive or silicone to like glue those panels down, that alone weighs 2 grams or 3 grams. So what we're going to do here, I'm going to get my wife to sew the panels in with some nylon sewing thread, and they'll all be sewed in there. So that thread will weigh practically zero. So that's kind of where we're going. They're just a little test outside with the five panels and a super cap and the tracker, and it was transmitting there. We got the software on it, and Bill, as soon as you get the other software fixed that I don't know how to do, I'll load it on there, and then I'll try to package this thing together. So that's it.
By the way, my code has got a tree sensing algorithm and a cornfield sensing algorithm.
Does it? All right. Well, we need to use that. But
it's 100% effective at finding both of those to land.
It's doubtful it's going to hit those again this time, you know. And there it is outside, basically. That's with just one of those little single panels. Bill, I was able to run it on a single 50 milliamp panel there with a super cap. Without the super cap, it wouldn't run at all, but... that's only 50 milliamps, whereas if I did want to run the battery, which I want to, I would have to double the panels up because there's not enough current there. Or my other option was to go with the little glass cells. And as much as I hate them, there is a benefit to them to have so much current. You can pull almost a quarter of an amp current out of those 10 little cells there.
But be careful because they are, you just look at them crosswise and they'll break in half.
Yeah, I know it. I claimed I would never, ever use them. And in fact, all my designs got away from that. But I need the current, man. I need the current. So.
Well, you know, if you've got that much current, what you need to do is set these things up so they can pop smoke when they get on the ground. And maybe give them an audio so they can yell, "Over here, over here."
Maybe pop a little smoke canister,
yeah,
you know,
pop a little, up a some, little flag on it, you know.
Maybe a little red smoke right there. And we could probably get some military surplus smoke cans or something. That might be a little heavy to carry.
Yeah, but you know, one thing that you neglected to do this last trip and it cost you this balloon, you should have given the ants little hammers like they do on Deadliest Catch, and they could have knocked all that ice off for you.
Well, they could have. I guess they could have. You know, one idea about when you're coming down, I've got an idea for a visual, because that LiPo battery, if you can short that LiPo battery out, it will burst and start spewing fire, and then that fire would go up the string. The fire would go up the string.
Not the way to find your balloon.
The fire would go up the string to the hydrogen-filled balloon at the top. So, you know, if we could set that sucker off at about 100 feet and make that work, you know, I think we could find it.
But yeah, you can do that. But then you're also going to set the cornfield on fire, so make sure you got somebody else's call sign on that thing, like Bill's or, you know.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about
it. Bill's maybe, you know, so that, you know, it doesn't get traced back to you.
Well, there's not a lot of options. We're going to go with the LiPo. It's not good at that altitude. It's good, though, if you come down below 20,000. It will run. It'll run good. We're
now,
hoping.
Is this next one going to have the battery in it? Because you showed battery inside that styrofoam.
Yeah, we're going to run that battery.
Okay, so, I thought you said you weren't doing another battery.
No, we're going to do another battery because it had a lot of benefits. But I'm going lighter. I'm going much lighter. That other battery was 630 milliamp hours. This one is like 230. It's in fact, this battery is close to equal weight of the super cap, so we're going to replace the super caps with the battery, so hopefully we'll get a little advantage there.
Now, Tom, as I recall, your reward sign had KW5GP on it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It has a reward. You just contact KW5GP for a $150 reward.
Yeah, the check will be in your email.
Yeah. Well, you can do that these days with PayPal, yeah. Oh, man. All right, that's cool. Oh, let's see. Let's do this.
Oh, this has been too much fun. I need to sign out of here for the
All
evening,
right, Katie.
Gentlemen and friends.
Thanks.
So I'll say 73 for now.
Thanks for being with us, Katie.
You bet. See you guys next week.
All right.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. So let me I'm going to... I'm sorry.
Before we go, my wife went out today, and she brought me the most important thing for hunting for down balloons in the jungle. She brought home a machete and tall rubber boots.
Well, I tell you, you needed it probably from what I saw.
Yeah, I think that's next time I go out in that jungle, I'll have that with me. I got caught in some vines that had a lot of thorns on them, and I didn't think I was going to be able to move. I was kind of trapped.
Oh, man. Well, you had help there, so, you know, you could have got rescued.
Well, pray for me about that time. But,
yeah.
That's okay.
I'm gonna open the phone lines up. Stephen Bond wants to call in and say hi tonight. I think we've covered most of the topics that we were going to cover. I'm interested in starting a 75-meter bingo up, you know. All right, if you're out there and you want to call in, 712, is that right, 712? I hope that's right.
That's what it says.
712, I put a bogus number up here a couple weeks ago. 712-775-7270. I'm pretty sure that's our number. Pretty sure that's it. Let me check this other.
We do a similar game.
That's what you got up on the screen there, Tom.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I put the right.
It may be fake. He's real good at
712. Yeah, that's it.
Numbers.
That's it. That's going to be the
that's
number right
Dale's
here.
Dale's phone number.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Dale, if your phone starts ringing.
All right. Well, let's just open our phone lines. Now, we have phone lines in 65 countries for people to call in. Local numbers. If you're in a foreign country, look at our website and go up to contact on our website, and where it says contact, click on that, and it'll list the international numbers over on the left side of the page.
Got phone lines for, what was that, 79 countries?
65 countries. I think they just added a few
countries?
More. Yep, yep.
And not a single one of those in Mississippi.
That's true. That's true. In fact, I think the number for Mississippi is a pay number.
Yeah. Well, you got to find a phone booth out in the middle of a cornfield.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a pay phone down there for the, you have to go to the pay phone to take the call?
Yeah.
Hope all right. You don't have to coins because we're all out of those.
Well, that's true. That's true.
It's
yeah.
True.
All right. Where's Russ at? Russ usually calls in. Come on, somebody. We need your call. We got a few minutes before the show closes here, and steer us on a new subject or something. We're talking about 75-meter bingo. And, you know, I was listening to 75 today, and that's kind of right, you know. It didn't really sound like a ham band. You know, it's all local people, and it's just 75 is just so much different from the other bands, man.
And I'm still right on the edge that I couldn't hear you because I'm, you know, not far enough away for any kind of propagation and too close for ground effect.
Yeah.
So we do a bingo game through for teleconferencing through work, and basically if you hear somebody's dog or cat or see their dog, during the teleconference, so Glenn wins the prize on that.
Yeah,
you get a couple of those bingo squares.
I didn't say the magic T-O-Y word, so they both decided to leave me alone and go somewhere else.
Well, this card here has stents, gout. I can't hardly read it from here.
I can't read it.
You can't read it?
I think I need cataract surgery.
Gallstones, high blood pressure.
Oh, that's great.
Kidney stones.
Let's see. I got hearing aids,
cataract surgery.
I had the kidney stones. I probably got bingo here.
Grandkids visiting. I should have got a better.
I don't see anything about surgery.
Yeah, there's a hip replacement on here.
No, I don't have a hip replacement.
Let's see, there's a colonoscopy.
No.
We used to, you know, back when we had our, we had Doc on here. In fact, Doc's in the chat room tonight. WH4YYD, I think, is his call. And we used to have Doc on every night on the show. We'd have hangout afterwards, and man, we got into some great ham radio discussions, colonoscopies, and all those kind of things, you know.
It's funny that Orlando Ham Fest last year was the first ham fest I did after my heart surgery.
Yeah.
So that worked out really well.
Well, you were just you hadn't had it yet.
No, I had it. That was 6 months at Huntsville.
That's right.
Oh, I had a fabulous cardiologist. They were scheduling up the surgery, and they wanted to do it like the week before Huntsville. And I said, "Can't we postpone this until after Huntsville?" And he's like, "Look, it's taken you 60 years to get to this point. Another week ain't going to make a whole lot of difference." So yeah, go to the ham fest, have fun.
Yeah.
Somebody
just asked about what happened to your payload that landed in Poland that they were going to relaunch.
Well, maybe you can give us an update, because I sure can't get anything out of those guys.
They may still be under lockdown.
They might be, but I'll give my friends in Poland a ring and see if I can find out.
Yeah, you know, we got a great picture of their club that holding the tracker. I don't know how they got it out of the tree. I think there was a picture of it way up in about an 80-foot tree, and then they were holding a tracker. But he sent me an email and says, "What do you want to do with it? You mean relaunch it?" And I said, "Yeah, you know." And then I was sending back other notes, and I never got any correspondence after that.
I think they had a crossbow, and it was about 110 feet up in a tree, but they got it out.
Wow. I think. We may have. Yep, we have. We have Bill on the phone. How you doing, Bill? Bill?
Yeah, good evening to you, Tom, and everybody that's on the show this evening. I guess you were discussing the Poland balloon there when I rang in, so I really didn't hear what's going on. I muted the actual audio coming out of the show.
Yeah, we were just mentioning the whatever happened to the balloon that landed in Poland. So, don't know. Bill's going to have to contact him and see if he can run it down. See if we can find out what's going on with it.
Yeah, okay. Well,
because that was going to be kind of neat. That was going to be kind of a neat balloon, because what we said is it just stopped in Poland to get gas, and it was going to be relaunched, and we were hoping we might be the first balloon that actually did a kind of a relay around the world, you know.
That'd be good if you could do that.
Yeah, and they were going to relaunch it for us.
Yeah. Now, Bill, you need to take that little balloon there and give him a little sign, you know, take me to my to your leader, and then put one of your little trackers on him and let him go.
I need to do that.
All right. Let's see. Pamela. Do we have a Pamela on the phone? Probably not. Mr. Pamela, are you Mr. Pamela, are you there?
This is Mike.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good.
Caller, you got to get the number put in your name. It was it's in Pamela's name.
Yeah, it always does that.
Yeah. Where are you, Mike, and what's your call?
KK4VVG.
Oh, Mike.
Do you guys know him?
Yeah. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, they know me. I'm doing good, Bob.
All right. Look at there. So you never know who's going to be watching the show, man.
Mike is the chapter president for our Anzo County ARC out here.
Yeah, and he's been telling me to wake up and smile and all kinds of other stuff since he's been watching.
Huh. Well, now is he in the same county with you guys?
He is.
Yeah. Well, he should have been on a search with you. You could have sent him into the jungle.
Well, he's got a drone, and if we can acquire a signal, we're going to enlist him to take him out there.
Yeah.
He's retired Marine, so...
Oh, that's okay.
He's used to getting out there in the jungle.
Yeah. You know, I would really hate to take a... You know, I'd love to have a drone, but let me tell you, the first thing I would probably do after I spent $2,000 on one, it would land in the top of a tree somewhere, and I couldn't find it.
Well, that's what happened to me. I went down to Florida, and my dad's down there. He's WA9RDA, and he sat there, and he lost one in a tree. So
yeah.
So I had to go down there and find it for him. It was on top of a tree.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know. If I could fly one and had a string hooked to it where I could pull it back, you know, that might work. I don't know.
Don't work that way. You ain't got that much string.
Well.
Well, I just wanted to say congratulations to Bob and them. If they need help going out looking for it, let me know.
All right. Well, there we go. We got another member of the search party.
I'm going to pick on them during our next meeting.
Yeah. All right.
Now, you do realize that it will never come down in that area of the world again.
Yeah, but these guys, we can deploy these guys now. They're on the team. If it goes down in New England, I mean, hey, all I got to do is call them on the phone and say Paul Revere, and they know what that means, man.
Heading up there.
They're going to grab their bags, and they're going to head out. Mike, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. I have dropped statistically more payloads launched from here in Alabama, have landed in North Carolina and South Carolina than just about any other state.
Oh, really?
So that's a great location for finding stuff.
We're a very welcoming state.
Well, you know, each one of those trackers is a couple, you know, $100 or so. So, you know, you just put a big net out and catch you a few, and there's all the Arduinos you'd ever want.
Yeah. Too bad you can't reuse the balloon. We got to come up with a different balloon, Bill. I have looked, Bill. How come we can't find any balloons that are suitable? What do we have to do to find a different kind of balloon?
Well, they make some Chinese balloons that are about $1 or $2 a piece that some people have been having success with, but they don't go as they go about the height of those little party balloons.
Yeah,
but you'd want to fly two of those, but you kind of have to go through pressure testing on them because their quality control is not so good in those particular Chinese balloons. But if you find some good ones, they can stay up quite some time.
Can't we just get some mini weather balloons or something? You know, babies.
No.
Actually, you can float a regular weather balloon for 1 or 2 days in the 100,000 feet, but the UV radiation from the sun degrades the latex.
Yeah.
So you could make a balloon out of a material like latex that didn't degrade in sunlight, then you'd have one.
So you're darned if you do, darned if you
so don't. I'm thinking about, no, this is probably... I wouldn't get but 3,000 more feet. I'm thinking two SBSs, connected, you know, the filler spout, connect the filler spouts where the gas can go from one to the other.
Yeah, but if you get a hole in one, you're just going to lose that much more gas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I would go with the two, and that way you'd at least, you know, stay up around 20,000 feet
until
you hit the first storm.
No, no. Hey, you fly two balloons, if one of them goes down, the whole thing goes down.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that right, Bill?
You would have to reduce the gas in both of them to equalize.
Yeah, I don't think the weight of even the weight of those balloons, Bill. I've been trying to look at the numbers to put two balloons together and put the right gas in where if one goes down, it will it'll still stay up. But I don't think that's possible, is it?
The party balloons weigh 38 grams apiece, so if you lose one, all of a sudden now you've got 38 grams of dead weight on it.
Right.
So this is not good.
And the SBS balloons are over 100 grams. They're 100 grams each. So you'd each balloon would have to carry that extra 100 grams of lift.
That one would.
Well, yeah. You know, you probably have a couple IO pins left over on that little Arduino. You know, have a little cutter on it so it can cut the dead balloon off.
Now, if you could do that, if you could cut the dead balloon off, that would work, I think.
You know, get inflation sensors up inside the balloons. Yeah. Those are only going to be a gram or two.
Let's see. Who we have on our telephone?
You've got Mike TK2EMK calling from Australia.
Australia. We got a call from down under, guys. How you doing? Now, this is Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I didn't quite hear you very well when you first came in. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well, thanks, Tom. Good evening to everybody there. Just been watching your balloon exploit with interest. Follow each week to see what's happening.
Well, I thought on this last one we might cross the equator, and I thought we might get down in the southern hemisphere, and if that happened, we might could come see you.
but we
didn't make it.
There is incredible activity in Australia.
Yeah, what did you say, Bill? There's a lot of activity in Australia.
Yeah, there's a lot of high altitude balloon and these Pico balloons launched from Australia. They have one that's been up for several months, gone around the world several times, upwards of six times or more. Mm-hmm. VK3YT, I believe, launched that one of his, and then a ham in New Zealand launched another, and they've been floating around the world for some months now in the southern hemisphere. And both of them are on, one's on Whisper. I think they both are on Whisper, but one also does KT9, so on 20 meters. Mm-hmm. So that's something to listen for if you have HF capabilities on Whisper or JT9. And there's a website that you can go to called tracker.habhub.org and tracker.hotelalphabravohoteluniteredbravo.org. You can see where all these balloons are flying in the world, including the southern hemisphere.
It's good.
So, Mike, are you on lunch break right now?
Yes. Yeah, it's lunchtime here, and I always sit down at this club every week to watch you guys. Keep up the good work.
Well, it's a good time for you guys down here in Australia to watch the show. I mean, the time here is terrible. I think we got the best time in the U.S. It's too early on the West Coast and it's too late on the East Coast, so I don't know. But at least there are some areas of the world that can watch it, I guess.
NY2GN.
Oh, NY2GN? Are you there?
I'm here.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, watching the show live on my tablet.
Well, cool. It's been a while since I talked to you.
It's been a while, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, what's going on up there?
I got a question for Bill, and we've never. I've been watching the show for a while. You've never talked about FAA rules or how do we launch a balloon? I mean, I'm in Brooklyn, New York, and in the New York area, we have thousands of flights, a lot of air traffic. So, you guys are out in the green part of the world with no real airplanes and small buildings and stuff. So what are the rules concerning launching these things? And do I have to notify the FAA or weight restrictions or anything like that?
Those are good questions. When you're beyond the control area of a very large area, a large airport, you basically, the limit is 6 pounds per payload for a total of 12 pounds, where you don't need a special FAA waiver. But if for launching payloads of that size, I usually call flight service and I issue a notice to airmen, particularly if I'm flying near a larger airport. And if I'm within 5 or 10 miles of a very large airport, I'll generally, like when I fly out of Dayton Hamvention, for example, because we have the Dayton Airport there, the Vandalia, and we also have Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, I usually file a notam there. And sometimes I will also, like say if I'm within 5 miles any of the airfields, I will call the tower and get to find out when the best time for the minimum air traffic is to launch, and I'll get their approval. I will call them, and they will tell me when to launch in real time, and that way we can avoid any instance near a large airport in a metropolitan area such as yours. Your best bet, however, is to go on Long Island or so go out if you're able to get out of the big city, so that, because you also want it to, if you're flying a latex balloon, you want it to land, if you have cameras on board and tracking equipment, you want it to land somewhere that you can recover it. So you can do online prediction. There's programs that will tell you, based on your payload weight, the balloon size, and your ascent rate, and your parachute size, where, and it's pretty accurate, it'll tell you where you're going to land for a given launch site. So you can choose your launch site to land in an area that is not the Atlantic Ocean, for example, where you're at. So that's generally, I try and go to a more rural area when possible, but there are times when I'm not able to do that, like launching for a school or a Hamfest event, and then that's what I do. I file a notice to airmen, and I will, and if I'm very close to a large airport, I will also call the tower and get their approval for the best time to launch.
And you got to realize, too, that the payloads that we're flying are about the weight of three U.S. nickels. And as Bill was saying, you can fly payloads up to 12 pounds. So, you know, we've got, you guys have been watching the show, probably remember Walter. He's the FedEx pilot, a friend of mine, has been on the show a few times. And he's been flying for 35 years. And Walter has, it's a big place up here. Walter has never seen one of these balloons. In fact, he's in 35 years of flying. I don't think he's even seen a weather balloon. Now, he did say he saw a hot air balloon once, but it's an awful big place up there.
Wow. Okay, so in the New York area, I either have to go to the tip of Long Island, way east, or probably a little bit northwest of the city, because I have to be away from Newark International Airport, Kennedy, LaGuardia. Boy, I'm using old terms over here. And even Philadelphia and north of us, Stewart Airport. So, all right, what happens with, again, for Bill, a party balloon with minimal weight and just to get it up there.
That's a little different because that falls into the category of a school kid leaving a balloon loose with a note attached, because our payloads are about the weight of a note. So, yeah, that doesn't require a tremendous amount of contact because their hazard is so low because they're so lightweight. But even so, I would probably advise going out a little more rural than the center of Manhattan, because you want to be away from power lines when you're launching in large buildings where they can get caught up in the wind currents. So you want more of a rural setting where there's not a lot of obstructions for the payload to catch on. Because these little Pico balloons have very little lift to them, so even a small breeze is going to cause you trouble if you have any obstructions within a few hundred feet of you, even on very low winds. So that's the difference in those. But as far as a hazard aircraft, they're quite minimal because of their extreme low weight and density.
I think I'm going to go with my first launch, party balloon, and go out east over as far east as I could get on Long Island. And, well, that's where the prevailing, what's the wind that's always up there pushing the jets around? The jet stream, that's it. I think I'm going to do it from that to get my first balloon up in the air.
There you go. That'd be a good spot. It'd be a good send-off if you want to go across the Atlantic Ocean, because you'll be over the ocean in no time.
Yeah. Tom, I know you were building your own boards. For me and the rest of the hams listening, just to do it the easy way, are there ready-made boards that I could just pick up, program, and fill a balloon with helium or hydrogen or whatever I could get, and just do this simply?
Well, you know, if you want to really do it simple and use probably the best tracker, send an email right there to Bill Brown, W-B-A-E-L-K. And Bill has neat trackers that he sells. And let me tell you, it's already built. It comes with the solar panels on it and everything. It's already programmed. I mean, you take it out of a box and you fly it, pretty much.
Yeah, and I include a balloon, too, a small party balloon with it.
And, you can get a balloon with it. You know, and, you know, the very first balloon that Bill launched for us was a single silver party balloon, and it made it all the way to Japan. We hit a storm in Japan, but a single party balloon can go a long ways.
But it's my call sign at Gmail. This Firemouth email.
Yeah, just send WB8ELK at Gmail a note, and he can fix you up. And I would suggest anybody wanting to try this, do it that way first. Start off. I mean, I'm still a beginner. I mean, I've got 400 flights behind me, but I'm still a beginner. But a lot of people jump on this thing and say, I want to build one. Tell me how to build it. Well, I'll probably spend $1,000 just gearing up to try to build a thing. I mean, I bought special tweezers for the surface mount stuff. The monitor with the magnifier on it. I've got a binocular microscope here that I have to use. I even had to get different soldering irons with the smallest tip I've ever seen to build these things. It just, and it was very frustrating. This little board that I'm building that was designed by YO3 ICT, I had these boards made in China. I sent them the plans, and they actually printed the boards, and then I ordered all the parts. I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be. The parts are so small on the end of those little tweezers. Those tweezers are sharp, man. The little bitty parts on that tweezer, you can barely see them. And it's tough. So if you want to get your feet wet, order you a tracker already built and start out with one of these party balloons and see how that goes. Party balloons can make it around the world if you're lucky. And let me tell you, luck is probably one of the biggest things about getting that balloon around. We've flown this year. We've probably flown 6 SBS balloons this year, and those things are about $150 a piece. And only one of them has made it around the world, and several of them. Well, this last one, it crashed 2 states over. You know, so.
Now I'll tell you rule of thumb, Tom.
Yeah.
Is to fly for the best success. Fly in a month that has an R in it.
A month that has an R in it.
So that would be oysters.
Let's see. That'd be January. It's got an R. February, March, April.
The season for
May. May doesn't have. May does not have an R.
September
May,
through
June,
July. April.
I think I'll be geared up for September. By the way, Tom, I've been watching for years and years and years, and I've been watching since your first launch of the balloon, and unfortunately, I saw the one go down in Japan when you were on the air. So it's experience and, like you said, a little bit of luck. So I think I'm going to give Bill an email later on in the month, and I think September is a good month for me to go out to Long Island and launch this. So I thank you, gentlemen. It's a wonderful show. Believe it or not, I watch you every single week, but I watch you after the show.
All right.
Usually on Thursday or Friday night, I catch on YouTube. But now, because of COVID, we're fine here, but I was able to get on and see you live tonight, so I'm glad I was able to talk to you and Bill and everybody else on the show. And I didn't see, I just tuned in a couple of minutes ago. Katie doing okay? I saw she was under the weather a little bit.
Yeah, I think she's doing fine.
Okay, cool. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much. I'll sign off and I'll watch the show, the rest of the show on my tablet here.
Okay, well, cool, man. Thanks for calling in.
I have a question.
Hey, everybody, and this is NY2G.
All right. Is Dave Kessler still with us, or has Dave already dropped off?
He dropped off.
Dave dropped off. Okay. All right. Whoop. All right. So, all right. Was that Dave? Dave? Somebody? Who was that? That said he had a question.
I was wondering how important it is to geofence these transmitters so that they don't transmit over areas that, like the UK and North Korea and so on. Yeah, that's a good question. We have a little integer-based algorithm that KD2EAT and W7QO came up with we draw a box of coordinates around an area we don't want to transmit. And the three biggies are North Korea. We don't want to start World War III with one of our amateur radio balloons. And Yemen is one. And the number three area is the United Kingdom. They have a holdover law that you cannot operate amateur radio from an aerial device, be it a hot air balloon, an airplane, or even a kite or RC plane. So we have to draw a geofence box around it. The GPS tells us that we're within that box and shut the transmitter down over that region.
Is that a holdover from World War I or World War II?
I'm not sure what the reasoning is. It seems likely, and they just never bothered to change it. But I believe also their version of the FAA probably has some feedback to that as well. I don't know what the reasoning is. I know there's been some attempts because there is a big ballooning group called the UK High Altitude Society, and there's others in the United Kingdom. There's all kinds of balloon activity, but they all have to use license-free devices such as those low-power 434 megahertz. They do a lot of teletype. And they also have a LORA, if they're familiar with LORA. Did I pronounce that right, Glenn? LORA?
I don't know. They, you know, it's pronounced, you know, 30,000 different ways.
But they've got a big effort for using LoRa transmitters, because there's a lot of citizen groups that have LoRa ground stations scattered about for online sensors and networking sensors of Internet of Things. And so some, if you're over Europe, some parts of the United States, the coverage is not as good as APRS, of course, but you can get some coverage in certain areas with a license-free device like that.
Yeah, and the LoRa, that stands for long range, and it's in the ISM, the Industrial Scientific Medical Band, which Bill said was unlicensed.
So, guys, you can really get attached to ballooning. Bill got me started. There's W5KUB1, the one that went down in Japan. So it was pretty tough to lose our first one, and we've gone on now with many other flights. I want to thank everybody out there. We've had a number of people that sent in donations. They're loving the flight so much that they sent in some donations to help cover these balloons. And we have been flying the big balloons, and we really appreciate it, guys. And your name goes on the website if you donate. We don't need any more donations right now, but we appreciate all those past people that have donated.
Hey, Bill. There was a question in the chat room about do you have a website? I'm assuming they're going to want to get some stuff from you.
I just have a very basic website, mycallsign.com, WBATELK.com. I guess that should be my project this week to fix that up a little bit more detail, so I'll get to work on that.
I'll look at that today. We've been on quite long.
Yeah, my email address on there to contact me, and I have a couple pictures. But I'll try and put some more technical details up on that website.
Bill, I understand you worked with Tampa for a few years. Is that right?
Yes, I used to work for Army Research Engineer for a long time, and then I've been working over at Marshall Space Flight Center for the past year and a half.
When I was stationed 83 to 86, I was stationed out there at Edwards, and I used to help recover the astronauts when they would land there on shuttle missions out there. So that was always a lot of fun out there. And then when I left there, went down to Los Angeles and worked at the space station down there, and used to work with them quite well. I actually worked on a rocket mine as a AFPRO. I was with the Air Force Office Special Investigations, and I worked out of there. My wife was working for there, and she worked there for Rocketdyne for several years. Of course, Rocketdyne is the company that made the space shuttle engines for them. So we were actually sitting in Rocketdyne when the Challenger went up and had its accident out there on the coast out there. So
I was in Pasadena when that happened. I lived in Pasadena at that time.
You know, my son and daughter, Chris, he's in the chat room tonight. They went to Florida to watch the launch, and they were actually blew up.
And I also I've been to the very first shuttle landing at Edwards when they had 250,000 people in the. In the gallery watching off in the distance, and we could hear the sonic boom as it, the double sonic boom as it came overhead. And then I ended up getting press passes after that. So I got front row seats at Edwards to watch several of the shuttle landings. That was pretty awesome, particularly one that landed. It was still dark when it landed, and it was just awesome to see it come in that way.
Yeah, I was on the flight line with that one for 51, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And then we recovered the astronauts, and we stayed with them until we put them on the jets to fly back down to Houston.
It was a super calm day, and when they flew overhead on the final approach, the double sonic boom sounded like somebody firing off a double-barrel shotgun. It was that loud.
Yeah. let's do it. It's getting very late. I want to go ahead and close the show, but you guys on the remote, just stick around. We'll talk again in a few minutes. But since we've been talking about astronauts, I'm going to close with this, guys. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us and tuning in. And here's our friend, astronaut Doug Wheelock.
My name is Doug Wheelock. In my spare time on the space station, I stay connected to the planet Earth.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Doug Wheelock. In my spare time
on the
space
that?
Station, I stay connected to the planet Earth through the ham radio, through amateur radio. I tune in to ZFU5KUB. Hi, I'm Doug Wheelock. And in my spare time on the space station, I stay
connected. We didn't hear the intro, though.
You wouldn't hear that one.
Okay.
Why do I say turn into? Hi, I'm Doug Wheelock.
Anyway,
in my spare time on the space station,
are we off the air now?
No, we're still on. Yeah. Okay, so let me just say that was our friend astronaut Doug Wheelock, and those were bloopers. He was making a promo for the show, and he could never. It took I think 10 takes to get a simple promo together. So you know. He's good at, you know, flying spaceships, but promos, he's not too good. Also, 2 years ago with Bill, we launched a balloon up there, the balloon race in Dayton, and we had astronaut Wheelock launch our balloon for us. We felt like, who's the best person to launch a balloon than an astronaut? So we waited third, let the other guys go first. Everybody took off fine. And then Doug crashed our balloon twice before we got it off the air. Anyway, he's a great guy. Great guy. Okay, guys, good night, everybody. We'll see you later. All right, I'm trying to see if we ended here.